Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
Mandela Effect Just Slapped Me Again by Luna Soulshine. So my ex Robin and I still live together in a house that we bought, and mostly can't stand each other. She is hopelessly brainwashed and deeply programmed. I'm wide awake and I see things the way that they are. This, among other things, is the reason why we separated. The contrast of consciousness has pushed us in two very different directions, and our timelines just keep changing. The resulting effects of the repeated changes have really made me feel crazy. She doesn't remember certain things that she's said or done in my timeline, and some of the things that she's accused me of saying, I know without a doubt I've never said or done. The final straw was yesterday. I was in the kitchen doing dishes, and Robin was talking to a friend of hers named Jenna about another friend of ours named Liz. Liz died really young from liver failure a few years ago. I was away when it happened, but I remember how deeply saddened I was when Robin called me and told me. Liz had a young boy that we absolutely adored, and I clearly recall, after hanging up the phone, that it occurred to me I had forgotten to ask about him and his situation since his mom was single and didn't really have any family. I was in utter shock, I guess. It was devastating. So there I am washing dishes when I hear Robin talking about friends of ours who were once drug addicts and alcoholics but turned their lives around, got amazing jobs, and had completely different lives now. Then she said to Jenna, "Remember my friend Liz with the little boy? She was a bad alcoholic and almost died, but is sober now and works for an attorney downtown." I stopped breathing. I couldn't make sense of my thoughts at that moment. I walked out to the den and said, "Liz passed away from liver failure." Robin said, "No, she didn't. She lives in another town and works for a lawyer. Why would you say that?" I began to argue with her, but I knew right then it was pointless. This memory problem had been happening way too much for it to be categorized as a misunderstanding. This was the most extreme case of Mandela effect that I have experienced. Also, one of the best ones because my friend was dead and now she's not. I would love to hear from anyone who has experienced anything like this, and I'd like to know that I'm not alone in this or just completely insane.
A Single Grave Cemetery by Kismet. I've moved around my whole life, but a big chunk of my childhood was spent in the American Northeast, aka where Stephen King lives and where most of his stories take place. Living there, you really start to understand why he writes the way he does. On foggy days when the mist rolled over the mountains, I'd jokingly tell people that I lived way too close to Stephen King to feel safe. New England has this unspoken rule. When you tell someone you've experienced something spooky, they just nod knowingly. Even the most skeptical people I've met would admit there's something otherworldly going on in the background here. The house I spent most of my teenage years in was a newer construction set deep in the woods, on what used to be the old Albany Turnpike carriage trail. One of the nearby houses was the original 1700s inn and carriage house. When it eventually went up for sale, the listing boasted, "Captain Dan Vining is buried right off the back porch." Only in New England could having a grave on your property be a selling point. It's now labeled a single grave cemetery, which, while common for family plots in the area, is still a little odd, even by New England standards. By the time we moved to Connecticut, I was already a strange kid. I'd convinced myself I'd seen UFOs in Arizona, spent a year in the deep south tromping through the woods looking for cryptids, and I was absolutely certain the moment I set foot in our house in New England that it was crawling with ghosts. Turns out I didn't have to wait long to be proven right. The house was set up a bit strangely. Downstairs was the kitchen, living room and dining room, and the bedrooms were upstairs. But off the main entry was a hall with a bathroom, a laundry room, the garage, and a staircase leading to a separate room above the garage, my bedroom. From the moment I moved in, I had issues with my door staying closed. I tried to brush it off as a foundation issue. You could roll a marble across the kitchen floor. But it was hard to keep telling myself that when the door opening was preceded by footsteps up my stairs and the sound of the knob turning. Turns out I wasn't the only one experiencing things. My mom would stay up late watching TV in the living room, which had an entertainment center with glass doors reflecting the hallway to the stairs. She told me that she would sometimes see a dark figure, its head brushing the ceiling, peeking around the corner before retreating. My mom, sister, and I also heard singing around the house for months before we realized it wasn't one of us. We nicknamed her the Singing Lady. She was mostly benign, but one night, as I worked on my homework, she sang directly in my ear. I jumped so hard I smacked my head on the gable and nearly knocked myself out. I had a bruise for a week and was not amused. My stepfather, however, stayed blissfully ignorant. This was, after all, the same man who brushed off a soda can flying out of his hand and smashing against the wall in our haunted house in North Carolina. The basement had this entity that thrived on groups. During one birthday party, I had about 14 friends over. We were playing Never Have I Ever when a Mylar helium balloon suddenly sank to the floor and stayed there. Everyone noticed when it slowly rose back up, as though someone was lifting it manually. The group looked at me in a panic. I just said, "Ignore it and it'll stop bothering us." After that, some friends refused to come back to my house. The entities weren't malicious, though. They were more like children trying to get attention. In one instance, they might have saved my baby sibling's life. My mom was preparing medication for them following dental surgery when the bottle tipped over and spilled before she could even pour it. Turns out the pharmacist had mixed the medication at 10 times the correct strength, and taking even a small dose would have been lethal. The strangest incident, though, was when my phone disappeared. It was this pre-smartphone flip phone, and I'd left it on the couch before going to the kitchen. When I came back, it was gone. I tore the house apart looking for it, calling it constantly. After a week, I gave up. But then, one day while stripping off my bed sheets, I found it tucked in the corner of the fitted sheet, somewhere I should have heard it ringing during my search. Even more bizarre, when I turned it on, the battery was fully charged, and none of my calls or voicemails had registered. The final straw came when I recorded an EVP. I was experimenting, asking questions, and cleaning up the audio to hear the responses. And on this one recording, I caught a very clear, "Thank you," followed by my name being spoken. It freaked my mom out so badly, she banned me from doing anything else that might stir up activity. These days, I live in an 1800s Victorian house that's been converted into apartments. I've got the attic floor, three black cats, and the unofficial title of Resident Witch. Aside from the occasional vanishing object, like the time a flower pot disappeared and never returned, it's been relatively peaceful. And thankfully, no one's buried off the back porch.
I thought we only had one ghost by Spider on the Wall. For some context, I grew up in a rented house that had farmland. The owner of the land came often as he had a home on the property that he considered a sort of vacation home. He liked me and my sister and let us run around the property without any issues. He even let us into the barn as long as we didn't mess with anything. We went in and out of the barn from time to time playing hide and seek and such until we started hearing weird noises. My sister was fairly young, and I was a jerk older sister who liked to scare her, so I told her that there was a ghost. She pretty much refused to go into the barn after that, at least for a few years. To be fair, I did think there was a ghost on the property. Sometimes weird things happened without explanation, like our dog barking at nothing, the chickens getting spooked randomly, or doors opening and shutting on their own, especially this one gate with a specific type of latch that most of my friends had a hard time figuring out when they came over. To say the least, it didn't just push open. My mom always called it angels and demons. She's pretty religious, so she refused to call it a ghost. I just called it our ghost. It was harmless, honestly, and didn't really mess with us in ways that seemed harmful. Sometimes, I even thought that it was looking out for us. We had cats that ran off from time to time, but somehow always made their way back home. Once my dad's truck door slammed, making him jump. There was a rattlesnake under his car. This saved him from getting bitten. There was even a time that the fridge door opened while I was home alone, making me look out the window next to it and seeing an accident on the road near our house. This story isn't about that ghost, though. It's about one that I didn't know about until we did something dumb. One week, my cousins were visiting. They liked our property, and I was really into the whole ghost hunting thing, so I told them that our barn was haunted. Being the kids that we were, my sister and my cousins and I all decided to take a ghost hunting trip to the barn at night. We snuck out of the house with some flashlights, my Polaroid camera, and my crappy old phone, then headed to the barn. My cousins were rambunctious, to say the least. They both grew up in a household with very few rules of any kind, and they got away with a lot. So when I told them not to touch anything in the barn, they did not listen. As soon as we got inside, they were jumping on the hay and messing around on the old tractor. I tried my best to get them to stop, but they didn't listen. So I gave up fairly quickly. This was an older barn, but it had a second level where the hay used to be stored. But now it was basically an empty space. We headed up there and everyone sat down. I decided to attempt to talk to the ghost. I figured that it would be our harmless ghost that might shut a door or something. But that's not what happened. Nothing happened, actually. I tried to do the whole, if there's anyone here besides us, let yourself be known. And there was nothing. The thing I didn't realize until later was that there was actually nothing. No noise from the road nearby, or any of the usual animal chatter. It was dead silent. I decided it was a bust and that we should head back to the house and go to sleep. My sister was still in grade school and looked pretty tired, so I started pushing everyone downstairs, being the last one to leave the upper floor. That's when I felt a chill go up my spine. I had a really uneasy feeling. The feeling of being watched. I turned around, flashing my light into the darkness. Not seeing anything, I decided to snap a photo with my Polaroid because I thought that the dark room being illuminated by the flashlight looked kind of creepy and cool. I was in middle school and I wanted to show off that I went into a scary place at night. It's silly, I know. I then walked down the stairs behind everyone, shaking the photo to let it develop. One of my cousins stopped at the bottom of the stairs, talking with everyone about a bug that she spotted on the wall or something. I looked at the photo and stopped in my tracks. Honestly, I wasn't sure if it would develop at all, but it did, and I saw a shadow in the corner that I hadn't seen before. It looked like 2 feet poking out in the darkness. I snapped out of it and told everyone to be quiet, then started pushing them out of the barn. They were asking me what was wrong when I told them to shut up. We all heard it, the sounds of footsteps above us. It sounded like boots hitting the wooden floors. Honestly, I think we were all too scared to move for a moment. That is, until the footsteps got faster and closer to the stairs. I shoved my cousins and picked up my sister, bolting out of the barn and slamming the door behind us, locking it. I heard a loud thud, and the door shook hard like someone was trying to shove it open. We all ran like hell. My sister went bawling to my dad, waking both of my parents up. My mom was upset, but my dad saw how shaken up we all were, and shut my mom down, sending us off to bed. We were banned from going into the barn after that because my mom thought that we played a trick to scare my little sister. Even though I tried to tell them that it wasn't a trick, my mom wasn't having it. In all honesty, I never wanted to go back into that barn. Whatever was in there, it didn't like guests touching all of its stuff, and it was clear that we were no longer welcome. Honestly, I don't have any idea what I encountered, but I know that there is something else on that farm, and it's evil. I don't know why. I just had this feeling that if I ever stepped foot in there again, I would end up hurt or worse. I took my senior photos outside of the barn, and even that felt like being too close.
Grandma Under the Stairs by Kara. My grandma passed away in the early 90s. She had 3 daughters, my mom and her 2 sisters. My aunt loves doing embroidery and was at a big embroidery group shop with a ton of people, some who she knew and some who she didn't. She was sitting on a couch when a woman she had never met before walked over to her and put her hand on her shoulder. She just stood there with her eyes closed for a few moments. She then looked at my aunt and said, "Your mother wants me to tell you that she loved living under the stairs." My aunt, very confused, didn't know what to say or think. Fast forward a week or two, and my aunt asked my mom where she kept my grandmother's ashes. My mom held onto them for years before taking them to a permanent spot on a wall in a cemetery. My mom told my aunt, in the bar. My aunt couldn't believe what she heard, because my parents' bar sits directly under the stairs. I wonder why, of all messages to pass along, it was that. The story did make me laugh and feel good, knowing we're connected with our loved ones long after they're gone.
Loud Vibrational Noise in Pisgah Forest by Dents A.D. 4239. A while back, my girlfriend, another couple, and I spent a day at the beach along the Davidson River and had a very odd experience. We found this spot the day before, and the three of us spent the day chilling. One friend went upriver about 500 yards around the bend and came back stating that he had heard a weird noise. We disregarded it and continued on with the day, leaving without incident. Upon our return the next day, it was surprisingly crowded. At about 3 p.m., the place emptied out and we were alone until maybe 5 p.m. We all began to pack the car, which was maybe 50 yards away, and the friend who heard the noise and I returned to the beach for the last two items. We had been skipping rocks all day with complete failure, and we decided to throw a couple more before we left. We threw maybe two rocks, when all of a sudden, my friend skipped his rock easily about 40 yards, hitting the water maybe 50 times. Before we could even react, this extremely loud vibrational noise started. The best I can describe it is that it sounded like the buzzing of a guitar amp that isn't fully plugged in. It was so loud, you could feel it in your chest as it got closer, like a helicopter or something was about to fly over the riverbank. Just as it felt like it was going to turn into our line of visibility, it kept going and seemed to pass over where the car was, heading upward toward the mountain. The noise abruptly stopped, and we both looked at each other. We thought, what was that? My friend turned to me and said, that was weird, but it's going to be even weirder if the girls didn't hear it. We returned to the car, and both of them were sitting inside, pissed off, asking why we had taken so long. When we asked if they had heard the noise, they said they hadn't heard a thing. We then asked them how long they thought that we had been gone. They said no less than 45 minutes. I'd say we were gone no more than 5 to 7 minutes at the most. I've spent no less than 40 days at this river spot and have never had anything else happen, nor have I heard anyone else experiencing something similar.
Haunted Mine by Jamie. I've always been skeptical when it comes to the paranormal, but not in a dismissive way. More like I never thought it would happen to me. Then I went camping in the Gifford Pinchot National Park located in Washington. Some friends and I were near this old abandoned mine out in the woods. We heard stories about it being haunted, but nobody in the group really took it seriously. We just wanted a place to hang out and explore, nothing more. Well, maybe some party favors, but nothing crazy. We arrived late in the afternoon, set up our tents, and spent a while walking around. The place was eerie but fascinating. We kept joking around, trying to one-up each other with spooky what-ifs. But once the sun set, the vibe completely changed. It wasn't just the darkness, though. Best way I can explain it is that there was something heavy in the air. Like the woods had gone silent and we were being watched. That night after dinner around the fire, we started talking about the rumors of the mine we were near. Supposedly a woman had been murdered there decades ago. People claimed her ghost still wandered the area. We laughed about it at first, but the jokes started to feel forced, like none of us wanted to admit how uneasy we actually were. I remember hearing something rustling in the trees, but when I pointed it out, everyone shrugged it off as an animal. When it got late, we crawled into our tents. I was sharing mine with my friend Sarah. We tried to fall asleep, but I couldn't stop thinking about that mine. I kept hearing faint sounds, like footsteps crunching on sticks, or soft whispers carried by the wind. I told myself it was just my imagination, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something was moving outside. Sarah heard it too. She whispered, "Do you think someone's out there?" And I could hear the fear in her voice. At one point, I couldn't take it anymore. I grabbed my flashlight and stepped outside, heart pounding. It was pitch black, except for the fire that was basically out. I scanned the clearing and saw nothing, until I noticed something at the edge of the woods. It looked like a tall figure, tall and pale, standing just far enough away that I couldn't make out any details. My breath caught in my throat. It didn't move, just stood there, watching. I wanted to call out, but for the life of me, just couldn't speak. I backed up toward the tent, and when I looked again, it was gone. I told myself it must have been a trick of the light, maybe a tree or some weird shadow, but my gut told me otherwise. I didn't tell Sarah. I just climbed back into the tent and tried to sleep, but every sound felt like it was right next to us. The next morning, I told the group what I had seen, half expecting them to tease me. But to my surprise, our friend Mark admitted that he had seen something too. He said when he got up to use the bathroom in the middle of the night, he saw a white figure darting between the trees near the mine entrance. That's when Sarah chimed in, saying she thought she heard crying during the night, but convinced herself it was an animal. We decided to cut the trip short and packed up our things. We were all on edge, but still pretty calm and composed, all things considering. As we were leaving, I glanced back at the mine one last time, and I swear I saw something, or someone, standing in the shadows near the entrance. It was your typical silhouette of a human, or whatever else might stand upright on two legs. It could have been my imagination, but I was still beyond scared and ready to leave at that point. What really unsettled me, though, was a conversation I had with Sarah not long after. She said she kept having nightmares about that night, about a woman in white staring at her from the woods, whispering her name. I still don't know what we encountered out there. Maybe it was nothing, just our imaginations running wild. But I can't explain the figure I saw, or why we all had such a strong feeling of being watched. To this day, the thought of that forest sends shivers down my spine. I've had other strange experiences since then, but nothing quite like that night.
Something Found Me in Maine by Aromatic Industry 401. Back in 2010, I was driving around looking for a place to bird hunt. I finally stopped at a piece of town-owned property that I had only gone to once before, and that was to fish for trout in a brook about a mile in. After parking, I started down the old tote road that split the property for its entire length. The day was very nice and nothing seemed unusual. I followed the road until I got to the far side of an old wood yard that abutted the stream. That's when it got quiet. The opening was probably 20 yards across, with the brook hidden behind some alders on the other side. I sensed it before I heard it. Something told me not to go across that clearing into the stream. I have spent a lifetime in the woods, and I have only had that feeling a few times. The first sound that I heard was heavy footsteps, very deliberate and slow. I couldn't see what was making the sound, and for no reason, I was scared. I felt fear. I knew that I did not want to see what was approaching me. I stopped at the brook and heard it cross and walk to the edge of the alders, then stop. All I had was a single-shot 20-gauge with birdshot. I had a feeling of danger. It moved on the side of the alders to my left, a few yards at a time. The only glimpse that I caught was a dark, narrow figure, very tall, at least 7 feet. Not knowing what else to do, I pointed my shotgun into the air and touched off a shot. But it just stayed where it was. I shouted, but it didn't move. That little voice told me to go. Don't run, but go. As I backed up, the alders, where I last heard it move, parted as if it was getting a better look. Whatever it was stayed right there, as if to let me know that it saw me and that I should go no further. That mile walk back to my truck felt as if I were walking through a cemetery at night, always turning around and looking everywhere. This encounter has played over and over in my mind, and I don't know what it was. I've never gone back, only because something inside me says it would not end well. 14 years later, and it still scares me. Anyway, that's my encounter, and I've never told anyone until now.
So I rarely go back and listen to episodes, but sometimes people reach out and give their two cents about a story, or sometimes we'll get attention drawn to it on Patreon or our Discord server.
Yeah, and if more than 24 hours have passed, you've got to reread or listen to fully remember what happened in these stories.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So what story came up?
One I narrated in episode 154. Called I Ran Into Myself in the Future, Then in the Past. Not the most concise story title, but...
Yeah, and it's funny because you bring that up, and just from the title, I have no idea what story it was.
Exactly, yeah, case in point. This was like back in November.
Okay.
But yeah, only a couple of people have brought it up, but I figured it doesn't really hurt to revisit stories that we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually kind of surprised that we hadn't talked about it. It's right up our alley.
Yeah, and I guess you're going to have to... catch me up on it, and some of the listeners, I'm sure, too.
Yeah, true, true. Basically, some guy runs into a strange older guy when he's out jogging. Then he joins the army, and however many years later, comes back home and walks his usual jogging trail.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then he bumps into, like, his younger self, right?
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, I remember it now. It was like some weird doppelganger time loop. And yeah, you're right. I'm surprised that we didn't talk about it.
Yeah, it was a cool one. Just imagine running up to yourself, literally, and then doing it again, however many years later. Not just seeing your younger self, but reliving the exact moment you ran into your future self as a teenager. I'm already confusing myself just saying that out loud.
I mean, well, it's one thing to think about time travel in like the sci-fi sense, but to actually experience something like that firsthand is crazy.
Yeah.
And it's not like he passed his younger self on the street. From what I remember, the way that the encounter played out, you know, down to the dialogue, it was so precise.
Yeah.
It was almost like the universe was scripting that moment.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It seemed like some sort of closed time loop. You can't really change the past or the future. They're all connected somehow. But the fact he just bumps into his future self, his older future self as a kid, all stunned and speechless, then... years later, completes the loop, I guess you could say, by meeting his younger self. At least that's how I'm establishing this closed time loop thing in my head. It's pretty crazy, like you were saying.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really hoping a very talented director is listening to this episode and contacting the author from that episode, because this is definitely a movie I would watch. It's just, I don't know, it's one of my favorite topics that it's covered in films.
Oh, yeah. Some of the best stories have to do with time travel or time loops. Donnie Darko, Looper.
Edge of Tomorrow, Butterfly Effect.
Yeah. Yeah. The list goes on and on. I could go on forever, baby. Perfect. Perfect. We finally got that natural reference in the show 3 years later.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I remember this one movie that came out when we were kids where you could freeze time or slow it down super slow. It wasn't quite freezing it.
I know exactly what you're talking about. This was Clock Stoppers.
Oh, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't tell you anything about it. I just remember the name. I don't think I actually watched it.
It might be time to change that. I remember loving it, especially if you're into the whole time loop thing. It's fun. It's fun. I think it came out like 2001, 2002.
Yeah, I'm not opposed.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps an ironic blast to the past with that throwback discussion, but whatever. We featured a lot of stories about haunted locations, but the one you read this week by Spider on the Wall stands out to me.
Yeah.
It's not just the usual creaking doors or eerie feelings. Things really escalated in this one pretty quickly.
Yeah.
From nothing to footsteps charging at them and slamming the door.
Yeah, yeah. It's like they poked this paranormal sleeping bear. The author even mentions that they used to go into the barn all the time without any issues, but the moment that they bring their cousins, who are messing with stuff, it's like something snaps. Whatever was in there just didn't want to be disturbed and didn't like those cousins.
Yeah, it feels like it's more than just a haunting. There's a difference between being the so-called harmless ghost that everyone seemed to believe helped the family and whatever malevolent thing they encountered in the barn. It makes me wonder if we're dealing with two entirely different entities, maybe.
Well, there was this study in the 70s called the Philippe Experiment, where researchers tried to create a ghost through, I guess, what they called collective focus and storytelling, according to what I found online. They actually started experiencing, you know, poltergeist activity, which, you know, suggests that emotional or mental energy might influence these events. So it's possible that the cousin's behavior, combined with, you know, the nighttime spooky setting, it acted as some kind of catalyst for whatever was already in the barn.
Oh, I'm sure everything's a catalyst. I remember seeing a movie based on that study you're talking about. I don't even remember what you said, but that sounds so familiar.
Yeah.
It wasn't great, but it was an interesting concept.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're talking about The Apparition.
That's the one. Look at you, yeah. 2-2 this episode.
Yeah, I read about that one when I was looking into the Philippe Experiment. That's the only reason I know about it, but I haven't personally watched it.
Oh, let me save you some time.
I'll take your word for it. It doesn't look good.
Yeah, no. But yeah, some good theories. There's also the mother's religious beliefs, which always have an impact on people's interpretations or how things play out.
Yeah, yeah. It's another thinker of a story, I guess.
A true classic.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, speaking of classics, might be too early to say, but I really enjoyed the story that took place in the Northeast by Kismet.
Mm-hmm.
I've always felt drawn to that whole region, but I still actually haven't been.
Yeah, you gotta go.
Have you been?
No, but you gotta go.
I mean, I'll be in upstate New York next week, so that's something pretty close.
Yeah, inching your way closer to Maine, for sure.
Yeah.
What's the occasion?
My services have been requested on the set of an upcoming horror film. That's all I can say.
Oh, were they actually requested, or did you harass a bunch of filmmakers until somebody said yeah?
Something in between, actually. It was like, hey, cool podcast. And that turned into, thanks, cool movies. Let me know if you ever need some help. And here we are.
Okay. That's nice.
Yeah.
So no empty gestures.
No.
Gotta love it. Try your best not to get catfished or killed, though, or anything like that.
Yeah, that'd be annoying. Maybe just a good old-fashioned kidnapping.
Classic.
Then I resurface however long later, leaving people with more questions than answers.
Yeah, as much as I'd appreciate the Let's Not Meet story arc, I really hope that you're not willing this into the universe.
Nah. I used to always need some sort of secondary reason to leave my house at all, so getting kidnapped would just set back all of the progress I've made not being a hermit. I'm going to try for that not to happen.
I know exactly what you mean. I'm the same way. I typically need more than one reason to leave the house, but I do like going to the movies. I guess that's my one thing.
That's a good thing to have. And if you hold out for a Tuesday or Wednesday matinee, you're usually pretty golden.
Yeah, I usually go when the mood strikes me, and I just hope that I don't get a bad audience. But I apparently never learn my lesson. I'm trying to avoid the weekends.
Yeah, I swear, some people go to the theater just to use those powered reclining seats as fidget spinners.
Yeah, we went and saw Sonic 3 over the weekend, you know, on a Friday night. Great idea.
Oh, wow.
And there was just a bunch of kids sitting behind us, and they were literally just up talking to each other, walking around, making all kinds of noise. But the fact that it was a kids movie, and we were there with kids as well, my friend's kids came, it almost negated the fact that they were being super annoying back there. It was like, ah, they're kids. They're just having fun, and we're watching a kids movie. And it actually turned out to be kind of fun because they would laugh so loud at the funny parts and the goofy stuff. So it actually added to it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with that sentiment. If you're walking your dog out in the park and some skateboarding kids are rolling on by and scare your little chow, get over it. Let the kids skateboard.
Exactly. I agree. I'm the same way. I got to stop being a grumpy old man and let kids be kids. But there is always one person in like a non-kids movie, like Dr. Evil spinning around in his chair for the entire movie.
Oh, man. I really liked that second Austin Powers movie.
Me too.
All I asked for was a freaking rotating chair, okay? Yeah, just that constant on and off mechanical whirring sound. It's like a dentist taking 2 hours to fill a single cavity. I hate those chairs in the theaters. Like people, I feel like we don't deserve those anymore, and we've ruined a good thing. Take them away.
Yeah, one of the 3 or 4 times I went to see Deadpool and Wolverine, somebody was making these micro adjustments to their seat for like 30 minutes straight. And it, you know, of course they waited until after the movie started. But they were perfectly fine kicking their feet up and watching the previews, not a peep.
Please tell me you got a good look at them. That solves everything.
Yeah, I was just over there. Would you look at that? Would you look at that?
Sometimes you just got to take a good look at it.
Would you look at that? I love that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you really do, you know, give ourselves closure however we can.
Yeah, for sure. Like making eye contact with somebody you're indulging in a little road rage with.
Exactly.
I'll sometimes make up a stranger's entire life story in 2 seconds and come up with conclusions like, oh, honest mistake, I'm sure, that they would never, or even something like, that was probably on me, my bad.
Yeah, yeah. When I glanced over at this person in the theater, I was basically expecting a kid.
Yeah.
But no, it was just some guy about our age just acting like a child.
Acting a fool, yeah. I would have had to resist the urge to let out some exaggerated sigh and be like, are you comfortable yet, Goldilocks?
I wish. I don't know. You just never know what legitimate medical issues people might have, though.
I know. That's the actual reason I never say anything.
Yep.
Maybe they have a weird thing with the circulation in their legs. I don't know.
Yeah, it's good to show some grace, but what if they know what they're doing? And they're fishing for conflict. You know those people?
Oh, all too well. All too well. Then you're really screwed. You're either suffering in silence or giving them exactly what they want by indulging.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could get it really wrong. Confront them while being a jerk about it, only for them to actually have a medical issue.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, somebody 3 rows behind you filmed the entire interaction and put it online.
Oh, of course. And it becomes their life mission to get you canceled for being such a heartless, what would it be, ableist.
Yeah, yeah, they got me in my George Costanza moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are we able to tie any of this back to the story that we haven't talked about yet?
We always do, kinda.
I like the comical, rough transitions.
Yeah, it gives us that raw and unpolished street cred.
It's almost like when news anchors don't transition from one segment to the next very smoothly. There's like no break, no change in anchor, just like a human wall of text.
Oh, yeah. In one breath, they're just like, and they were bludgeoned to death in their home. Enter now to win the new Disney on Ice sweepstakes. Okay, yeah. Moving on. Ask and ye shall eventually receive. On to Kismet's story. Of all the things that were going on.
Yeah.
What I found interesting the most was the phone.
I know. They don't make them like they used to, but even on an old flip phone, it doesn't sound possible for it to still have a full charge. Plus, none of the calls went through.
Yeah, and even with the off chance that there was something going on with the cell towers all week, and that battery in specific was some freak of nature off the manufacturing line.
Yeah.
The fact it was found tucked underneath the bed's fitted sheet, that's the most mind-boggling thing to me. I can't make sense of that.
Yeah, if you take out any paranormal explanations, that really only leaves two things. You're either losing your mind at that point, or somebody is playing a really, really bad joke on you.
Yeah.
I don't personally know the author, but that's not the gist I'm getting.
Yeah, no, it's just completely puzzling.
And the medication bottle. Like, what are the odds that a ghost, or whatever it was, steps in at just the right moment to stop a disaster?
I know, right? And I really hope all these instances are with the same spirit, because if it's saving lives and acting as a sort of guardian angel, I guess, that would mean the stepfather soda. Are you following?
Yeah, it's also some diet shaming poltergeist.
Yes, yes. Or just showing some tough love. You and yeah. I have both had some Dr. Pepper season pass holders in our lives. Love them all the same.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Fair, fair. It's cool either way. A guardian angel or angels who couldn't resist messing with them a bit. It's like the Mylar balloon at the party. It's harmless, but just enough to say, hey, I'm here.
Yeah, and that EVP saying their name, Kismet, that's a,
Yeah, it's so unique. It's not a very common name, as far as I'm aware. And they said how clearly they heard it being spoken, too. Honestly, it's amazing that they stuck it out as long as they did, only for them to, you know, end up in an 1800s Victorian house.
In the attic with three black cats. It's too perfect.
Yeah, so far so good, though, it seems.
Yeah, keep us posted. You know, if anything changes.
Yeah, in that paranormal magnet of yours, stay safe.
Peace out.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess that's a good cue for us. Thanks so much for listening, and make sure to send your stories in to stories@oddtrails.com if you want to hear them on the show, and sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/oddtrails to get ad-free versions of all of our episodes every single week. It's the best way to listen to the podcast. And make sure to check out the new episodes of my other podcasts like Let's Not Meet, Cryptic Encounters, and the Old Time Radio Cast, all at crypticcountypodcasts.com. See everyone next week. Stay safe.
Peace out.
And the ghouls disturb you, darling.